So certainly teaching a client how to do exercises is so valuable, because even if it's not new to them, that dog has compensatory patterns or is learning compensatory patterns, and we want to help them avoid some of the things that potentially could lead to further injuries.
How do you know how far is too far when walking your tripods? And when is it too early to start rehab exercises after amputation? Find out with Dr. Mandy on this episode of Tripod Talk Radio.
Man scratching like a three-legged dog.
For any tripod, cat or dog.
Why do some vets do things that way? Why?
So many people don't realize that their dogs are in pain.
Hello again. Welcome back to Tripod Talk Radio. We're Renee and Jim, and this is episode number 121. You know, we are all about rehab when it comes to keeping tripods fit and strong. And it's been quite a while since we talked about the benefits of proper rehabilitation here. So we are excited to have Dr. Mandy Blackwelder from Healing Arts Animal Care with us today to talk all about rehab. Dr. Mandy has been practicing veterinary medicine since 1998, and she was first certified as a canine rehab therapist in 2013. She has been keeping current with all of the latest rehab therapies, and she's seen her share of three-legged patients. Her approach to animal care is one that considers the whole body and a multifaceted treatment approach that may include nutrition, supplementation, chiropractic, massage, and, of course, rehab exercises. We dive into all these topics and more. So let's get on with the show. Dr. Blackwelder, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Nice to be here.
Hey, I heard you like to be called Dr. Mandy, so that's what we're going to call you.
Hey, that's what everybody calls me.
Awesome. So we're so happy to have you here because we haven't had a rehab therapist on for a while. And as you know, we are rehab crazy at Tripods. There's a lot of reasons for that. Thank you. But I came across you because you contacted us for some of our outreach materials. And I want our community to get to know you because you have so much knowledge. So can you start by just giving us a little bit of background on who you are and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I own a rehabilitation-specific practice in Beaverton, Oregon, which is just outside of Portland. And we do multiple rehab modalities, though it's an exciting field to be in because there's always new stuff and you go and you're like, ooh, like I just learned yesterday that there's such a thing as an electro-stim whirlpool. I was like, what is that?
Whoa.
So anyway, there's always new things in this field, which is really exciting. And it's very much driven by the human physical therapy side. So that's really exciting. My background, actually, I went to vet school to be a large animal veterinarian. I was planning on spending the rest of my life in the Midwest doing cows and pigs. A little bit of a circuitous story, but had you told me that I was going to be doing small animal specialty practice on the East Coast in a city, I would have been like, you are smoking something. But that's where I landed. Love what I do. We're about to move in from a 1100 square foot facility to a 5,000 square foot facility.
Wow.
A little nerve wracking, but very excited to be able to expand to that point and be able to offer more and more to the community.
Wow. So was there a particular situation, a client that got you focused on rehab in particular? And how did you end up on the West Coast?
So when I was in veterinary school, rehab wasn't really a thing. I graduated in 1998. But at that point, Washington State University had a small program. And there was somebody at my vet school who was in connection with them who was sort of on the sly doing this. Like the students didn't really know about it. And I heard about it. And so I kept sort of like popping my head in there. And then as I did acupuncture training while I was in vet school. And so the sort of whole pet approach was something that just was ingrained in me from the beginning. Maybe it's because I'm from Boulder, Colorado, which is very airy fairy. I don't know. But and in doing cattle, like that whole animal approach is really important because nutrition matters and are their feet comfortable and all of those things that sometimes get lost in small animal medicine. It's actually very important in farm medicine. You're going to have better production, better meat, better milk, whatever we're talking about, if the whole animal is doing well. My large animal practice that I was a part of literally worked me to death. And I went looking for another job, had lots and lots of offers. And at that time, which unfortunately I think is still kind of the case, the large animal industry was not getting what's happened in small animal, which is that most of us are women and that we have families, and women tend to be the head of their family household. And you need to be able to figure out how not to work 24 hours a day. And I didn't have a family at that point, but I was like, I don't want this to be my life. And I actually came to Oregon to interview at a dairy practice in Estacada, but I interviewed in this little town, Grants Pass, as a part of that. And I really liked the practice where I interviewed. And it sounds funny now, but I was like, he was offering an exorbitant amount of money. It was $50,000 a year. And so I ended up there. So that's how I ended up on the West Coast. And then that job was a great, I had a lot of freedom in what I was able to do in medicine. So I could do kind of my holistic stuff, but it was a really tough place to work. And so I finally reached a place where I was like, I really want to do rehab. And so called up mom and dad and said, can I borrow the money to do this? And they said, sure. And so I got certified in rehab.
And what year was this?
That was in 2012.
Okay.
And then, I did the course at CCRP course at University of Tennessee. And the next part is kind of hilarious. I have a friend who's a veterinary dentist, and she was doing her residency in Portland while running her practice in Southern Oregon. And she said, well, Mandy, she said, you know, Carol Helfer's practice is just sitting empty. And I said, who is Carol Helfer? And she said, she's rehab. She's been doing rehab forever. And it's true. She was doing rehab for 17 years in 2011. But she passed away and her practice was just sitting empty, which is the craziest needle in a haystack ever. And that was on a Saturday. I had that conversation. My husband and I drove up here on Wednesday, bought the practice from her estate. And then moved on up to Portland, which has been great for my family. I'm very surprised how well I became a suburbia girl. Although if you get me remotely close to the river and downtown, I get like all county.
I hear you. We've spent time in Portland. Yeah, I'd much rather be on the outskirts for sure.
Yeah. It's a beautiful city and it's a great place. I have a handicapped son, so lots and lots of opportunities for him, which is great. Yeah. I would, you know, send me out to the country any day.
Well, the people and animals of the area are very lucky to have you there. And now, when you were training to be a rehab therapist, is it what you thought it would be once you started practicing? What were some of the big surprises when you got into it?
So I think for me, the biggest surprise is kind of the niches that can happen. So in order to be a rehab therapist, you have to either be a veterinarian, certified veterinary technician, a doctor of physical therapy, a human doctor of physical therapy, or a human physical therapy assistant. And what was a big eye-opener for me was that as a veterinarian, I've now realized I really do more like a naturopathic medicine. I look at the whole dog and everything that's going on with the dog. And is your nutrition right to make sure that your muscles are working, like all those things. On the PT side of things, it's much more like human medicine, that this is your area of focus and you're focused on making sure these muscles and joints work better, but not necessarily the whole dog. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. And the human physical therapists have taught me so much about their side of things, manual manipulation, a lot of the things that they know having gone to PT school that I don't know. But scope of practice is different. And I think that clients don't necessarily understand that. If you're a vet-ish person, they're thinking, hey, can you look at my dog's teeth? Right. And so, and I did too. And so I was like, how do you manage that? How do you do that? So that was really surprising to me. And it allows people to have a choice in kind of, do you want the whole ball of wax, or are you feel like you're getting that from, you know, the chiropractor, like whoever else you're seeing, and do the human physical therapy side. And then as a vet tech and as a human physical therapist, you, depending on your state, but in most states, you have to work on a referral basis from a primary veterinarian. So in a way, you're working under that veterinarian's license, but you're also working under that veterinarian's diagnosis. So that gets a little bit sticky for the practitioner, because if the diagnosis is either vague or inaccurate, you have to tap dance a little bit and be like, hey, I need you to go back to your vet and let's investigate this a little further. You can't say, hey, your vet's, you know, made a mistake. You have a ruptured cruciate, right? So, I am excited to see that as this particular area of veterinary medicine grows, that we are collaborating with each other to make that, you know, make veterinarians learn more about PT as PT is, and that the PTs can then have the support of the veterinarians to take care of the rest. But we all just need to understand the scope of practice.
Yeah. And I really love the way it's evolved over the years, because when we first started Tripods, there were still a lot of people out there who could go and call themselves a therapist and not be under the guidance of a vet. And then a few years into Tripods, we learned really the gold standard is to have a therapist who works closely with the vet. Even better, have them be the vet. So,
yeah. Or at the very minimum certified. I mean, because there's a practice here in town that nobody's certified, and they're doing
still therapy. Out there, huh?
Mm-hmm. They're still out there. There's a lot of them. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's one reason why the Tripods Foundation Rehab Reimbursement Program will only reimburse if somebody has gone to a practice with certified practitioners. And it's just the way it's got to be. I can't imagine going to a human physical therapist who wasn't credentialed.
Scary. I think sometimes there's a disconnect in people's heads of, you know, it's sort of like when people get a breeder. Well, they've been doing this for 25 years, but have they been doing it well for 25 years? Ask their vet, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And it really always strikes me that people don't, they don't see how closely human PT and canine PT are together. It's you know, you would not go see a non-credentialed person for yourself. Why would you expect that for your dog or cat? Yeah. So it's always great to know that this field is growing. There's more practitioners like you. Our focus, of course, as you know, is on three-legged animals, dogs mostly, but we do get some cats. And I would love to know about your experience working with Tripods, and maybe let's talk about those people who came to you after their Tripod was doing really well after surgery, because we get a lot of people whose vets still say, just let him be a dog, they'll be fine. And the dog does do really well, but then maybe 6 months later comes back and the dog won't get up that day and has problems. We see that quite often, and it's no fault of the human because they didn't know what they didn't know. Jim and I didn't know what we didn't know when we had our first Tripod. So yeah, can you share some examples of situations like that?
Yeah. So First of all, I would say cats are the exception. Cats are like liquid, and they tend to be, you know, my first boss out of school would say, cats, put them behind the woodshed. They'll get better. And I mean, while I disagree with that as a veterinarian, three-legged cats very frequently are, they just adjust. They're amazing. And I think it's just because cats are such supple creatures. Dogs are not nearly as supple. Where I would love my colleagues to be paying attention when they're doing surgery is talking to the person about, hey, we have just taken a quarter of this dog away, right? And now the rest of the body is having to adjust to that missing piece. Mm-hmm. And so these guys are going to need some body work throughout their lives, right? Even a young dog who still is kind of liquid, right? We want to be sure that that dog is on a glucosamine and chondroitin supplement because we are asking more of the remaining bones than we were. And we want to slow down that progression of arthritis. We want to, in my mind, ideally, connect up with a veterinarian who is a chiropractor doing chiropractic, because that's what I find is that a lot of these guys, they're, you know, just like us, if you're wonky for a while, you need to kind of get realigned, as well as with a massage therapist. So from a bare minimum, you know, keeping the dog put together, that's what I like to see is a good chiropractor. To me, good chiropractic is not slamming and jamming. Dogs do not need cracking, and massage. From a rehab standpoint, the biggest things that I see are hind limb dogs that end up with a psoas injury on the other side. Mm-hmm. And that's because the psoas, it's a groin muscle that goes from the low back to the inner thigh. And it's one of the things that keeps that leg in. And so it's working a lot harder because it's got to work on that new balance. And one little skid out can cause a big problem for them with that. So, you know, having people aware of it in the beginning, that's a potential possibility, I think is important. And they're harder to heal in a three-legged dog because they can't limp. They're on that leg. And so clients need to have appropriate expectations of healing. You know, they're going to go online and read about, it's a, 6 to 8 week process. In a tripod, you know, it's a 12 to 16 week process, assuming they don't do anything silly in the interim. Right. Mm-hmm. And then four limb guys, I tend to see, either neck discomfort because they're pulling their head to try to rebalance, right? Or over time, we can get some shoulder strain on the other side, almost like the psoas. It's the same concept in the front, is that we're working on balancing in a different way. That's where we focus our rehabilitation, is on let's strengthen those muscles that kind of keep everything in the center, particularly the core, and go from there. Much of it depends on how active the dog was in the first place. You know, a fat lab that had a tumor is a totally different rehabilitation situation than a young dog that had a traumatic injury and lost a leg. Your fat dog is going to require, it's going to require a lot more because they don't have a lot of musculature to begin with. So
could we talk about the chiropractic modalities for just a minute? Because I think that brings in the discussion we were having about certification and the importance there. Because when we first learned about chiropractic for dogs, there was a certain device a veterinarian could buy and get a little certificate from the manufacturer of that device and then call themselves a chiropractor.
Has that changed? That's called VOM, veterinary orthopedic manipulation. Mm-hmm. If you go to a human chiropractor, the little thing that's called an activator, kablam, and there's a place for it. for sure. But what VOM is based upon is that everything must be out. So we're just going to bang all of them and see what works. And that's not okay. And particularly because the activator is the same activator for a cat and a chihuahua than it is for a German shepherd. So, right. Yikes. I know. That's, your eyes got big. Yes. So an activator has a place in chiropractic medicine, but it's, in my opinion, it should not be the only thing. And you are right. A weekend certificate, is not an education in chiropractic. There's an association, of veterinary chiropractors. And there are a couple of different certifications, just like there's a couple of different certifications in rehabilitation. And human chiropractors can do, veterinary chiropractic, depending on the state, like in Oregon, it gets very tricky because in Oregon, human chiropractors can be your primary physician, but the requirements for school for them is significantly more than it is for other places. I don't feel that a human chiropractor that became a veterinary chiropractor could be a primary person. It's not legal to do that, but you know, let's be sure we're all thinking in terms of a particular role. I personally prefer veterinary chiropractors that are veterinarians, because I feel like human medicine requires a bit more heavy-handedness, because people are prepared. They're like, oh, you're going to crack me. Mm-hmm. Right. Where dogs are just, you know, okay, whatever. So a gentle touch is so needed, as well as a very clear verse on how animals might move or splint themselves. However, many, many people are in, as I was down in Grants Pass, are in a situation where there isn't a veterinary chiropractor and there is a human chiropractor that does veterinary stuff, in which case I encourage veterinarians to get to know someone that they can develop a relationship with, to share cases. I think a lot of times veterinarians refer blindly and I don't think that's appropriate. So, chiropractic is something that can definitely be done wrong. The practitioner ideally is sharing how they choose their level of pressure with a pet owner.
So speaking of pet owners, what conditions or symptoms might the lay person need to notice when they want to ask about chiropractic? Like when should someone consider asking their vet?
Yeah, about chiropractic. So any dog that is having stiffness or soreness, chiropractic is definitely an option. Any dog that has had a chronic lameness, that's appropriate, not necessarily for the lameness, but for what the rest of the body is doing. It's just like for us, if you sprain your right ankle, now your left hip hurts a little bit. Now the right side, your right shoulder's out and the left side of your neck, it goes up the body. And so that's where chiropractic can be really nice. There is concern anytime we are treating neurologic disease, a dog with a disc, we have to be sure that no one is treating at the disc, no cowboy in it. But that doesn't mean that dog can't have chiropractic. We can work on the rest of the dog. I'm not a chiropractor, but the chiropractor can work on the rest of the dog, but we do not want to be treating at that disc if it is actively inflamed.
Would a chiropractor know, let's say somebody's dog has stiffness and that their first inclination is to turn towards a veterinary, not a veterinarian chiropractor, but an animal chiropractor. How is the chiropractor going to know that's a really serious issue versus just stiffness? I mean,
it depends on whether the dog is neurologic or not. So, okay. I mean, I think if you're worth your salt, you know that. And I think that's where it's challenging as a pet owner to know. And that's why the first thing I would do is be, you know, if I were searching for a veterinary chiropractor for my pet, yeah, I would start with my veterinarian and see if they have someone that they recommend and see how they recommend them. Are they saying, well, I've heard of this guy, right? Yeah. Or they're saying, oh, you know, I've had clients that have worked with so-and-so and have been really happy, or, you know, I've met this person and she's lovely, you know, those kinds of things. And if your vet doesn't know, then I would be talking to holistic practices and saying, okay, you know, who do you recommend for chiropractic, or talk to horse people and see who they recommend for chiropractic. Because many veterinary chiropractors that do horses also do small animal. So that's an option too.
Good to
know. So real quick, aside from, if anything's really quick, aside from the chiropractic modalities, before we were talking, before we started recording, we were talking about all sorts of things that rehab encompasses, from E-stem to water therapy to massage. What other rehab modalities might address the compensatory issues that develop after an amputation?
Yeah. So certainly teaching a client how to do exercises is so, so valuable, because that dog has, even if it's not new to them, that dog has compensatory patterns or is learning compensatory patterns. And we want to help them avoid some of the things that potentially could lead to further injury. So a good example would be a dog that is that has lost a hind limb. We want to be sure that they have a nice tight sit on their opposite leg rather than a lazy sit. If they're developing a lazy sit, then when they go to get up, they're more likely to be putting abnormal pressure on their knee and send them towards a cruciate problem, an ACL. So exercise, I think, is so important. Core, particularly, I mean, we all hear about core for people, but when you are a tripod, your core becomes so important. Dogs tend to think of themselves as a front end and a back end. And if we can make them a third instead of a half, front end, back end, you know, versus back end, core, front end, they now have that much more help that they can be giving to the area that's missing a limb. So those exercises are really important, and that the owners continue with them, finding a way to keep them part of their regular life. So very few of us can set aside 20 minutes a day and be like, I'm going to do PT. So it really becomes like, what can we incorporate into your walk? Can we do 5 sit to stands before you have breakfast? Can we weave between treats on our walk, you know, finding ways to incorporate that into their regular life. So I think therapeutic laser is very, very helpful, what people call cold laser, because muscles get mad, you know, when they've moved wrong or you wiped out. I mean, if you got 3 legs, you wipe out, you do it. Mm-hmm. And so if you have 4 legs, you wipe out. So, you know, therapeutic laser for helping those areas that are working extra hard. Massage, I think, is fantastic. Just getting those tissues, remaining those tissues supple and sliding past each other nicely. If a client can do nothing else, regular walking is so important. The dog needs that to maintain that steady gait and, you know, nice stretching of the muscles, but also for their brain. Dogs need to go outside. They need to smell. They need to do all those things, even if they have 3 legs, as you well know.
Well, when it comes to walking, how does somebody know if they're walking their dog the right amount when the dog has 3 legs?
Yeah.
Question
so
lot.
Usually I tell people to start out, I mean, assuming we didn't have a big walking regiment before whatever happened, mm-hmm. 5 minutes, a couple times a day. And then the next week do 10, and the next week do 15. And what we're looking for is, are we the same speed on the way there as on the way back? right? Or are we dragging by the time we get home? And then also, what does it look like a few hours after when the dog gets up, or the next day when the dog gets up? Is the dog, you know, not necessarily making noise, but struggling or seeming sore or slower to get up or excessively stretching, those types of things, you know, a couple of hours later. And I encourage owners to keep logs, you know, of what they're seeing. You know, my friends laugh at me that I'm, you know, always asking the client, are you keeping a log? But because sometimes, especially when we're dealing with a new situation for the dog, subtlety is important. Anyway, and then keep increasing as to what works with you. Yeah.
If somebody were a new tripod owner, the dog just had surgery and stitches are out. Yep. When would you start this walking routine?
So I would start it. I mean, even before stitches are out, you know, if we're using a sling or a help them up harness, something like that. Like, I think those 5-minute walks are great because, again, that dog just had something serious happen and they need to get out and do their normal stuff and smell the smells and go outside and also figure out like, bathroom breaks, you know, that gets adjusted when you've lost a limb. Like, how do I squat even in a front leg? Like, how do I adjust my, you know, bathroom is a big piece of being a three-legger. And so having a routine where you go outside and you smell the smells, I think that's really important. So if the dog had had a, you know, 20 minutes twice a day, let's say before, I would tell them to cut it in half, you know, do 10 minutes. Let's see how it goes. Because we've had downtime with surgery. The dog is burning additional calories and additional energy just in healing. So even if they're gung-ho, we need to cut them back just a little bit. And I hesitate to have them hike for the first probably month and a half until we know, because that's different footing, right? And while that's fantastic for challenging your balance and learning how to use your leg, you know, we don't want to overdo it, with hiking. So easy, you know, easy walks for the first month or so.
What are your thoughts about walking on sand? Cause we probably took our dog out way too soon. After surgery, took him to the beach and basically carried him back to the car.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Thank somebody, you, you live near the coast. Yeah.
So sand is tricky because just like for us, I mean, if you think about when you walk in the sand, like your ankles get tired. Yeah. So it is a wonderful therapeutic tool to use for short things. The challenge is dogs love the beach. I don't care what kind of dog you are. The smells are great. There's dead things to roll in. It's just awesome. And so it is really easy to overdo at the beach. And so I would say go to a playground and walk around in the sand, but I still would be cautious about the beach for the first, it depends on the dog. You know, if the dog was a really active muscular dog prior, I would probably say, you know, a month, 6 weeks, but even then it's going to be a short trip. You are not going to go spend the day on the beach. That is something you have to work back up to.
That is some of the most specific walking advice we have got inside, I should say.
And then what takeaway there for me is to take things very slowly, ramp them up slowly. It all depends on the previous condition and compensatory issues of the dog, but cut things in half. Start at 5-minute walks and then ramp those things up slowly while identifying certain issues.
It's always easier to go up slowly than it is to repair the crash, right?
Which we see all
hard.
Too often.
I mean, it's hard, especially, you know, your dog wants to go. The dog, you know, most of these guys are like, I don't care. I got three legs. Let's just go. Mm-hmm. And the owner wants to do something nice for their dog because they're feeling bad that they lost their leg. And in those situations, I would say, instead of going to the beach in that first month, buy your dog a dog toy and, you know, let them be digging around and getting treats out of the dog toy and, you know, things like that before we add too much, because it is easy to overdo.
And it comes back to what you mentioned about the importance of developing the core strength. And maybe you can correct us if we're wrong here, but one thing I tend to tell people is that walks alone won't develop the strength necessary to compensate for the loss of a limb. So work in exercises as well.
Yep. Exercises. And also, you know, with an appropriate timetable, different surfaces, just like we talked about. So, you know, going for a walk in the grass is a whole different situation than going for a walk on the cement. Cement is very predictable. Grass is not so predictable. It can be squishy, can be lumpy. And then hiking, you know, you've got different surfaces and you're stepping over things. And so all of those things are valuable and contribute to core and strength. We just have to take it slow.
I forget which therapist it was that we interviewed that mentioned walking along a slope. So a fairly inclined slope and not going up it, but walking along it and then turning around and walking along it in the opposite direction puts different weights on the dog. So
we call those zigzag hills.
Zigzag hills.
All of these are under the guidance of your own personal certified therapist. This doesn't, you know, there's no one size fits all for all dogs.
Right. And then that's this. Especially true of a tripod, just because it's so dependent upon the shape of the other limb, right? And the overall shape of the dog. There are chubby dogs that were couch potatoes that's a huge skill to do a zigzag hill versus a young border collie that, you know, was doing agility and got hit by a car, right? Like that's a whole different scenario. Yeah.
Well, as everybody can see and hear here is that, you know, every situation is so different and you can't really apply a one size fits all approach to tripod recovery and life afterwards. So again, everybody, that's why we encourage you to go see a rehab therapist, get reimbursed for your very first visit. Tripods Foundation can reimburse you up to $200 if you get your new tripod evaluated by a certified practitioner.
Good idea. One more thing that I wanted to mention when it comes to modalities, the underwater treadmill, that's everybody's favorite thing because it's cool.
Right.
But the underwater treadmill can be very challenging for tripods because as any treadmill, the underwater is a little bit easier because they're buoyant, but it, you know, if you think about for yourself, you know, if you were a four-legged thing and you went to walk on a treadmill and now you were a three-legged thing, like you have to make huge adjustments. Mm-hmm. And so, couple of things. One is, I would never, and this is true for four-legged animals too, but, be asking questions about how they work with the dog. Is there somebody in with them? Is the dog cross-tied in the underwater treadmill? So if they're cross-tied, that gives them a whole lot less ability to kind of adjust themselves. And with a tripod, they have to, especially a forelimb, they have to do a lot of up and down. So I don't like them cross-tied in the underwater treadmill.
Can you describe cross-tied?
Cross-tied is they've got a float coat on and then they've got, you know, some like bungee situation that goes to the side so that they can't go too far back or too far forward.
Okay.
There's value to that. And when it's done right, it's, it can work, but, for tripods, I think it's challenging. Okay. And it makes what is already trickier. And then I play with my tripods, I play with the incline of my treadmill. So sometimes say a forelimb amputee, sometimes those guys do way better going uphill a little bit because their power's in the back. Right. And so they can push and figure out the tread. Sometimes that same dog going downhill is better because when they're tipped downhill, they've got more water in the front and they're more buoyant in the front. Mm. So when I do underwater treadmill, when I'm talking to a client with a tripod and we're talking about underwater treadmill, I always say underwater treadmill is not for every tripod dog. There are dogs that it's just that pattern is too hard, in which case let's find another modality. They don't have to do it. But that we try it. we do make multiple adjustments, and then we, you know, stick with that for that dog. So it's not always the best modality for tripod dogs, even though we think the buoyancy would make it fantastic. The tread being a steady movement the whole time is tricky for a tripod dog.
Could we talk real briefly about the difference between the underwater treadmill and swimming? Because as I understand it, the treadmill helps them reach for the bottom and it's teaching them some better extension. Mm-hmm. But then you get the people who go, oh, I'll just take my dog swimming, and they take the chuck it and the dog sprints out in the water as far as they can. So what's the benefit of both?
That's what we did with our first tripod, to be fair. We did that exactly.
Now we know better. So what is the benefits of both?
Hindsight's 2020, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I hear you. When I first learned about psoas injuries, I'd been a veterinarian for like 15 years. And I was like, oh, how many of these have I missed? Right. Wow. So, I mean, we all get that. Hindsight's 2020. Swimming is a wonderful exercise for dogs who can handle it musculoskeletal, cardiovascular wise. So if you are not in good shape, swimming, particularly in a natural place where the water might be cold, that could be really overwhelming to the dog. And so swimming is something else that we kind of have to creep up on. Walking in water, so, you know, walking along the shore, same thing. Those dogs, that can be great because that drag is really good. But we just have to be paying attention to the overall condition of the dog. So from a swimming standpoint, three-legged dogs love to swim for the most part because they're back to being a four-legged dog in their head, right? They can propel themselves so nicely. And it's low impact. So that's great for those joints that are now carrying 25% more weight. And if the dog was a swimmer before, I feel that they can go out and start swimming. You know, I mean, we're not going to use the chuck it. We're going to start small, maybe just, you know, toss gently, a month, you know, 2 months in. Obviously depends on the condition of the dog. But if this is a dog that swam all the time before, which, you know, we live right on the Columbia, everybody chucks the ball in for their dog. Swimming in a controlled situation, like in a swim gym or in the underwater treadmill, our purpose there is also for that reach. You know, how much extension can we get? So when you're a three-legger, you have to keep everything underneath you so you don't fall down, right? And so when you're exercising or walking, you're not necessarily really extending those shoulders or really extending those hips because you don't have time. And so that's where swimming can be very helpful in a controlled situation. Swim gyms, if you have somebody who is experienced and knows what they're doing, and this is where certification is lacking. There is no certified swim person in the United States that I know of. There is one in the UK. So again, talk to your friends who do agility and show, and they're the ones a lot of times that are going to have a sense of who's got their act together, or somebody that it's part of a rehab program, which again, pools are, you know, not in every program. They're not in mine. We do swim in the underwater treadmill. And then the underwater treadmill, where it is helpful, is that it allows the dog to have that extra time to get a longer stride. So again, we're kind of getting that stretch and working the full extent of the muscles that we're not necessarily getting on land because we have to keep our weight underneath us so we don't fall down. Did that answer your question? I hope.
Perfect explanation. Thank you.
Perfect. And you know, Dr. Mandy, I could talk to you all day.
I could talk about what I do all day. I love what I do.
I'm so happy.
Well, then let's do this again.
We're going to do it again.
Let's do it again. I'm all for it.
All right. I have some ideas about what we'll talk about next, but for now, we cannot thank you enough for your expertise.
I love it. And I would love to, you know, if you guys want to do one on laser, want to do one on underwater treadmill, want to do one on harnesses. I'm big on
or the deep dive on prosthetics. We'd love to do that someday.
Deep dive on prosthetics. Yeah. I mean, okay. I'm always happy to help expand people's thinking and especially because rehab is, you know, if you graduated from vet school before 2010, you had zero rehab in your, unless you went to University of Tennessee. You didn't have any rehab as part of your vet school. And so it's this nebulous, well, yeah, you could try that kind of thing. As more veterinarians are coming out of school now, it's becoming more mainstream, but there's a lot of us that graduated before 2010 still out there.
Dr. Mandy, thank you so much for being here. We could go on all day, but we're going to instead have another episode with you because
I'd love it.
We do too. Thank you so much. Thank you from all the community.
And I love my three-leggers. I love them. They're heroes. I love them.
And we love that you love them. So thanks so much for your time.
Absolutely. You bet.
That's
a delivery.
There's a delivery. Okay. So,
I don't know if you already do this, but one really great piece of advice for your people post-op is to put a note on the door that says, dog recovering from surgery, do not ring bell, text me.
I love that.
It's so important because these guys jump up, right?
They jump up.
And they jump up thinking they have four legs. It's a really good way to skid out. So, yep. Note on the door that says, recovering dog, please text me, leave the package, whatever.
Many thanks to Dr. Mandy and the work she's doing to help keep our three and four-legged friends healthy and strong. If in the Portland area, make an appointment with Dr. Mandy for help with your tripod, or visit healingartsanimalcare.com for more information. And don't forget that the Tripods Foundation can pay for your first visit with Dr. Mandy or any certified rehab therapist. Get details and help finding a therapist near you at tripods.org/rehab.
He's a three-legged dog and he's still pretty good.
Thank you for tuning in. Subscribe to Tripod Talk Radio for more pet amputation tips from experts and claim your free gift just for listeners at downloads.tripods.com/podcast.